Welcome back to My Favorite Birder. I'm still April, and I'm still so glad you're joining me. Today, I sat down with one half of the awesome brother duo that since 2016 have been putting out great birding videos on their YouTube channel. They are showing the whole world what a cool adventure birding is. Not wrong there. He's a master's student at Nicholls State University, studying floodplain restoration with a focus on gars. Nope, in that pirate language, those are fish. Give a big hello, Wisconsin, to Derek Salomon. Salomon. He knows who he is. What? Yeah. So, Derek.
And this is how it begins. I know.
Salmon. All right. Derek Salmon. So, you have Badger Land birding. So, you're from Wisconsin, but you're down in the Bayou State now. So, what got you into birds, Derek?
So, yeah, you mentioned the channel. Me and my brother have the YouTube channel, Badger Land Birding, me and my brother Ryan. And so ever since we were young, we were always kind of into nature. I think I was always really into fish when I was younger. And so like, I'm still doing stuff involving fish, but like Ryan and I kind of got hooked into birding because we watched the movie, The Big Year. And it was kind of this thing where we're like, oh, people actually kind of go out and do this. And we were like, oh, well, we should try to go out in Wisconsin and do that. And we had really no idea what we were doing. So we went out in the winter and thought there'd be all these birds that were in our bird book that said they would be here in the winter, and there was like nothing. And we were like, I feel like we're must be doing this wrong. And so we started doing our research and started finding new species that were fairly common, but were just really cool for us to see. And it kind of really just evolved from there into us kind of almost becoming like an addiction where like you always want to go see something new and want to go on a new adventure.
Yes, like the Pokemon. And I know you had mentioned it on one of your shows. But it's funny because a lot of people that bird are into Pokemon. So I think it's that same thrill of got to catch them all.
Yeah, well, I don't think people necessarily realize how cool of a thing it is, because when we were growing up, it was always just kind of known as this thing people's grandparents did when they retired. Like, oh yeah, my grandpa bird watches now that he's retired and lives in Florida or whatever. It wasn't something that you heard a lot of people, a lot of younger people doing. And so when we went out and found that it was this really cool thing, it was kind of life-changing. We were just like, wow, this is really fun. And it's taking us to all these cool places we didn't know existed. You know, we just kind of wanted to share that adventure with other people because I feel like it wasn't really getting the proper attention that it should be as something that was so cool. And actually during the pandemic, it started to get a lot more attention because birding was one of the things you could do with all the restrictions, is go out by yourself and look for birds. So I think that actually got a lot of people into it. And we would meet people out on the trails, like where we would normally go, who were birding for the first time. And they'd be like so excited. They're like, yeah, I was trying to find this black crowned night heron. I remember specifically we were at Horicon Marsh and there was this one guy looking for a black crowned night heron. His fiance was there too. And she was going to meet him at another part of the path and he like found it. So like she ran up and gave him a big hug. And it was just like this cool experience to see.
Luckily, they were in a good place to find the right bird.
Yeah, I mean, Horicon's great. Wisconsin has a lot of amazing places to go bird.
Did you find that when you didn't know about birds much, or, you know, in the field guide, or, oh, okay, this bird, or, you know, I'm looking for it maybe in the wrong habitat or in the wrong time of year, you know, things like that?
Yeah, I think when we started out, it was really difficult because we didn't have a ton of friends who birded. So we'd see people, we would be on like the Facebook groups and where there was an email list where people sent sightings. And so we'd see all these other people finding these cool birds, but we were like, why can't we find anything yet?
Right.
So it was kind of like, it took a while to kind of build those connections and get those friends like who were also into birding and stuff. But we just had fun kind of going around our neighborhood at home and seeing birds we didn't know existed. Like we saw a common golden eye, which is a, you know, common winter bird in Wisconsin. We found one close to our house and we're like, oh, what is that? Like, it looks so exotic. We've never seen it before. And so that was an amazing experience to see that for the first time. And just, you know, to most really experienced birders, they'd just be like, oh, it's a common golden eye. But to us, it was this amazing new thing. in addition to just like, there's always a species you see, you just appreciate them every time. Like I always love seeing Inca doves, especially when they like are sitting really close to each other. There's just always your favorites that you love to see no matter what. But you also can pick up on other intricacies of things. Like you'll notice like breeding habits or different behaviors or, you know, interesting things like that. Ryan and I went to look at some cave swallows the other day, and we were picking up on the way they like lined this whole section of bridge. Like you couldn't see the edge of the bridge because there were so many cave swallows there. That was kind of one of those moments where it's like, wow, how cool is that? Where it's, you know, a bird you've seen a lot, but just the new way you see them doing things is surprising. So it makes it really cool.
Yeah. Your favorite bird is, I know the answer, so.
Yeah, so mine's the scissor-tailed flycatcher, and yes. It was just always like a really elegant looking bird with, you know, the forked tail and then like peached under the wings and stuff. And we actually had a couple show up in Milwaukee 1 year, and so I was able to actually get my first one in Wisconsin. And then Ryan and I did birding episodes in Oklahoma, and we saw a ton of them there. And so I was just kind of in heaven seeing them all over the place. And in Louisiana, we get a couple, or I've seen a couple this year already too, so. It's always a treat to see that one. I never get sick of seeing them. And even my friend Alex, who's a grad student at Oklahoma State, we asked him because he's, you know, sees them way more than I do, if he ever gets sick of them, and he said no. So I think that might just be one of the birds that, you know, you might never get sick of.
A pileated woodpecker for me. I just love them. They're so beautiful. What is your dream? Go ahead.
You can go first.
What was like a dream bird that you would want to see?
A dream bird. Well, first I was going to say about the pileated. I'm always surprised at how big they are. Because like I won't see one for a while and then I'll be like, oh my gosh, that thing's huge.
Yeah, like a pterodactyl. Yeah, that's what I always say.
I think a dream bird for me, I mean, there's so many, it's hard to like pick just one, but one of my friends, we took a trip to Texas to look for this elegant trogon that had been there. And it was the kind of thing where we were only in town for a few days. And so we went to the place where it was seen and nobody had seen it that day. And then we were told that it normally shows up later in the day. So we did other, we were look, ended up finding a hook-billed kite the next morning, which was a great find that had been reported there. So we refound it. But then we came back to look for the trogon. And the people that were there said it was just there like an hour ago and it gave them amazing views and stuff. And I was like, I thought it wasn't there in the morning. So we ended up not seeing that one. So that's kind of been on my list of one to see, and they're really beautiful plumage.
What type of bird is that?
It's, I haven't seen it, so I can't give you the full rundown, but it's, you know. It's
a in a book? Have you seen it in a book?
I've seen it in a book. It has, okay. The males have a lot brighter green and red plumage, like a really bright chest color, and then a long tail. Kind of like cuckoo style.
Ooh,
like,
I love cuckoos.
Yeah, I really like cuckoos too, so.
Trogon. I haven't even heard of that one before. Look at you, like, bringing up some new good stuff. Like a trogon, what? Yeah, I've never even heard of that. We had yellow-billed cuckoos in our woods in Ohio. And they, I know on the one episode you were speaking about him to someone, and you can always hear him before you can see him. Because I had heard it for a long time, but never saw it. And then finally, when I figured out what it was, I'm like, oh, I'm going to find this bird, you know. It was so crazy how he was sitting right there and you couldn't see, you know what I mean? Like really see him. Even like bright colored birds, I'm always surprised at how camouflage they are, but you think that you would see them, you know, easily. That's always.
Yeah, for sure. That happens a lot when we go out. We're like, it's a, you know, it's a bright red bird, or like it's a bright orange bird. You think right? It'd be easy to find, but very good at camouflaging. I did get to see my life of vermilion flycatcher in Louisiana last year. And that was the kind of thing where I showed up and someone had given me directions and it was right where they said it was would be. And it was just this bright red bird. Yeah, this thing does stick
yeah,
out.
Lucky. That's lucky. What was your last rare bird that you found?
I think the last one was the red-cockaded woodpeckers. There's this one place called, I think it's Big Branch National Wildlife Refuge in Louisiana. There's kind of like a known area where they hang out in like this parking lot. And so When I was there to see them, it had flooded apparently. So the roads to get there were completely underwater. So it took like walking in on the flooded roads to get to the parking lot to then see the Woodpeckers. So it was a really cool experience to find them that way. Not really off road, but just like into the water to look for them. And Ryan asked me later, he was like, "Were you worried about gators and stuff?" I was like, "Not really. Maybe I should have been concerned with
because you're a Yankee boy, you should have been worried about the water moccasins."
In the like the chocolate milk water, which is basically everywhere in South Louisiana, that's the stuff that you don't want to mess with gators in. But this was like fairly clear, kind of like brown, not like the muddy brown, kind of clear brown. I don't know, maybe kind of justify it, but
Cool. Down there, Louisiana has too much look.
I feel like you just get a vibe sometimes, like, yeah, there's probably not gators in here, like, you know, they are in here, because that trail then kind of like went to the parking lot, and then it was kind of flooded near this like pond area, and I was like, I'm not going in the pond area. There's gators in there.
Yeah, I would definitely be scared. Have you ever ran into any gators while you were birding down there?
We run into them. Normally they're smaller. I haven't ever felt scared of a gator or a snake while birding down here. At one of our, for those people that don't know, I'm a master's student at Nicholls State University. I'm actually studying floodplain restoration with focus on gars, like garfish. And so at one of our sites we work at, we get some really big gators, and we take these like little, they're called like pirogues or like Cajun kayaks basically. And we take those out to set gillnets. And at those sites, we have some really big gators. And so when they come close, you're like, I'm in a little kayak. This is not where I would like to make your acquaintance.
Right.
And when they see you, they do the big like tail flip thing.
Mm-hmm.
Makes so much commotion. And then you don't know where they are. So it's kind of like, all right, gonna watch out for that. So that's probably that was the time where I felt the most kind of unease because of a gator.
Yeah, I definitely would too. You need Troy out there with you. Yeah, because that's not very deep. That's like a John boat, really. You know what I mean? Like, because it's not that deep. No,
it's like thinner than a John boat. So if you basically just think of like a regular canoe, they're fairly tippy. So something decided to ram you, you might be in trouble.
Yeah, I definitely would be scared in that, even just for the water moccasins. Mm-mm.
I haven't had any bad experiences with them yet. There was a bird walk I went on with John Dillon, the Louisiana Ornithological Society president, and we were up near the Shreveport area, and we had a little water moccasin that was on the road, and he had a snake tongs in the back of his truck, so he grabbed them, and he was trying to show us that they'll open their mouth when they're, threatened. And this one just refused to do it. And it was just like the most chill water moccasin and just slithered off to the other side. And he's like, all right, I guess it.
Well, that's good.
Fair at all. So that's been most of my experiences like that. But I know that I've heard from other people that they'll, show you their mouth, and you definitely don't want to step on one by accident or anything.
Mm-mm. No, definitely not. No. What's your favorite state that you have birded in?
I mean, Wisconsin's definitely my favorite just because we know it, Ryan and I know it so well. But so I'm going to take Wisconsin off the board then, because we've been
places, even with the snow, Ryan, really. I mean, Derek. with the snow, you're going to pick Wisconsin.
There's something cool about winter birding in the snow, because there's no leaves on the trees. You're kind of like, you have a narrower list of species that might be there. And we get some really cool boreal species. So in the winter, if it's a good year for like red crossbills, white-winged crossbills, pine grosbeaks, bohemian waxwings, it like really focuses your attention on those species. And so that's like a really cool part of it. And definitely if it's a good eruptive year, you can, spend a lot of time with those winter finches and those boreal birds. So, So the winter birding, I think, is actually really great up there. I think aside from Wisconsin, well, I'm learning a lot about the cool places in Louisiana. I was really fascinated by the stuff we found in Oklahoma. And I think it was because we didn't really plan anything there. We just kind of like our friend Alex kind of invited us down. And so we just kind of met up with him, and he kind of showed us some cool places. And so to just experience that from more of the we don't have any expectations. We're just gonna go where Alex suggests that we go. We saw some really amazing places out there. So I think sometimes if you go into experiences without really a plan or anything, and then it kind of, you know, everything you see is kind of like a bonus in that sense.
Yeah. I have not been to Oklahoma or out west yet. I would like to. I like Florida and South Carolina. I'm getting used to it. I mean, it has good birds, obviously, shorebirds and whatnot. Florida just always seems to have good stuff. I mean, for, you know, shorebirds.
Sure.
Other birds I can't find much of. You know what I mean? Like the normal, quote unquote, birds, I guess.
Yeah, something that's interesting about Florida is when I was there, I went to Winding Waters Natural Area. And so that was where I was able to get my lifer limpkin and then snail kite. And so the limpkin and the snail kites, they primarily feed on apple snails. And so the apple snails have actually started to change their range. And so they've been moving into areas like Louisiana. And so now we've been getting a lot more limpkin regularly in Louisiana because of the apple snails. And so people are kind of wondering how far they're going to go. And we're also wondering if maybe the snail kites will at some point make their way over here, which would be really cool.
I want to know how long it took the snails to get there.
Yeah, we actually have a guy who's studying.
I mean, it had to take him a while.
I'm assuming it was probably introduced by people or carried by a bird or something, but it could have just been one that was really determined to travel over.
He's probably like, I'm out of here. Look at these lumpkins.
Heard about the bayou, just had to come visit, see what it was all
yeah.
about.
Yeah, true. Well, everybody will eat anything down here in Louisiana too.
I heard if something has a name, like if a bird has a Cajun name, it means they can probably make a gumbo out of it.
Oh yeah, they'll eat it. It used to be like a hit or miss at our house, like what we would eat. Well, I don't eat meat. Probably because of all the stuff that my mom did make, like growing up. I'm like, I'll pass, thank you. What is this? Who is this? Like, yeah.
Was it like the weirdest thing?
Yeah. The weird, well, turtle, I won't eat. But they said I liked it, but turtles, frog legs, all that stuff. Now, do you like the cuisine down there in Louisiana?
So I'm actually allergic to shellfish. So
iodine allergy.
I don't know 100%, but people are like, oh, you're really missing out. It was never something I liked when I was a kid, even. Like, my parents would make shrimp or something, and I would always just tell them it smelled really bad. And so, like, I never liked it. And I assume that's because of the allergy is why I never liked it. But when I was in high school, my dad made some shrimp, and I was having, like, some people over for, like, a Packers party. And so he was like, oh, you got to try one. I'm like, Dad, I really don't want to. Like, I really just... You know, and he's like, no, you got it. They're really good. And I tried one and it was just like an immediate reaction. And
oh,
I was out
God.
For a couple days then. And so they had me tested the allergy to it and they like tested it and they said the reaction was like violent or something.
Oh
so
my God.
Really bad. So I carry like an EpiPen everywhere I go. And then I stay away from the seafood, which, you know, everybody says I'm missing out, but I don't really have anything to compare it to. So
a lot of times the shellfish, it's an iodine allergy.
Yeah, that's been one of the thoughts about it. I've like, it was basically just like, well, I'm just going to touch seafood. So that's kind of the direction I've gone on that. But I do like the gumbo. There's also boudin is another thing that's kind of like a, sausage. Yeah, kind of, but there's like rice in it and stuff. So that's pretty good. A lot of fried chicken. So that's always good too. A lot of fried foods in general, but I like the fried chicken a lot.
I do like fried foods. I don't eat the yard bird, but I do like fried food. Why did y'all start your YouTube channel, which I love?
Oh, thanks. We appreciate it. So we started our channel, Badgerland Birding, because like I was saying, we found that birding was this really cool adventure and nobody was really portraying it like that. And so we saw all the fishing channels and all the other nature channels on YouTube. And of course we watched like Steve Irwin and Jeff Corwin growing up and they were big inspirations. And, you know, we watched Coyote Peterson's channel and stuff like that. And so we were like, nobody's really doing this for birding. And we were like, well, we could just try it and see. And so we did our first video looking for a king eider in Milwaukee that was rare. And we just recorded, we had a like a Mac, like a laptop Mac, and we recorded the audio voiceover with like no microphone or anything. And we just kind of used like the music that was there. And we had like a theme song that Ryan had like kind of created. And so we like just kind of put it out there, and we got enough kind of positive feedback, and we really enjoyed making it, that like we wanted to kind of keep it going. And so we look back at the first episode and we're just like, man, that was so bad. Because like we didn't really know how to talk to the camera or anything. Like we'd never done it before. So
right.
Experimenting with it. And you know, I look back and I'm like, man, like the audio sounds terrible and barely see, get a good view of the bird and all this, but it's cool to see how they change over time. And I've said this to Ryan before, like each new episode we make, I'm like, oh, this is the best episode we've ever done. And then I look back at it later and I'm like, oh, that was terrible. Like this new one is the best one we've ever done. So I think that's how you want to move, is where you feel like each new one is the best one.
But at least you do it. You know what I mean? Something to be said for, you know, daring greatly, as Brene says, but it's true. Because I thought the same thing. I'm like, well, I'm going to do that. And then I'm like, oh, and then I get caught up in the, oh, it has to be, you know, just right. Or, oh, I make too many mistakes. And then it was nice that Josh was always just like, who cares? It's a conversation. You're going to make mistakes, or, you know, trip up over your words or say this wrong. He was like, who cares? It's normal. So I'm like, well, cut him out. I don't want to, you know, be at all mistakes. He's like, no, we're leaving it all in there. Who cares? You know what I mean? People want that. It's just normal.
Yeah, there's actually a really interesting study about kind of like perfectionism. And they had two teams, or one team, they said their goal was to make like the perfect pot. They had to like create, like sculpt the perfect pot. And then the other team, their goal was to make as many pots as possible. And so like the most perfect looking pot actually came from the team that was just told to make as many as possible, because they had just done it so many times. And so it just kind of like came out of that expertise doing it versus the team that was told that they just had to do that perfect one. So there's definitely something about just making stuff and doing it and, you know, enjoying the process. And I think it'd definitely be different if I didn't have Ryan to make videos with. I think it'd be really easy to just kind of like get discouraged or bogged down. But like, we're always, you know, thinking of new ideas and coming up with new things. And having like a partner in that, I think, is really cool too.
Yeah. So and it's also cool that y'all are brothers, you know, that you get along well. And
he, yeah, for sure.
Even though you both look like babies, I'm going to tell you, when I found out your age, I'm like, what? And I mean,
I've been told that's going to come in handy when I'm older.
Yeah, because eventually, and literally, I thought you were like 18 tops. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, dude. You know, cute little kid.
Man, I kind of wish.
29 and 26. I'm like, what? Get out of here. So do you have other siblings, or is he your only?
It's just us two. And so, like, you know, we don't always get along all the time. I remember when, allegedly, when I was learning to walk. like
all right, Wendy, allegedly.
Well, that's what I've been told, you know. Okay. And then apparently I was also, like, I was going for an outlet with a fork once, and he told my mom. So I guess he kind of saved my life. Like, these are all things I've heard. So I don't know.
But might we would not play, like,
we would play football with each other in, like, the living room, and we'd watch, you know, football and stuff. And I think I would say that we're probably closer than, like, most siblings.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes, because when I'm back in town, from Louisiana, normally I drive, and it's like a 15 and a half hour drive. And so doing a drive like that, I say you need at least like 3 days to recover, because for the next couple of days, you just don't really feel like doing anything, because it's just such an exhausting trip. And so I'll be back like the first year, and Ryan will be like, oh, you want to make a video about this? I'm like, dude, I just need to chill for a minute. And so, like,
sometimes so you're like the old one.
No, it's just the trip. It's just so exhausting.
Don't believe me, I know.
When I want to make something, he's like, oh, I don't know, I don't really feel like it. So, but normally when we end up just being like, oh, we should just do it and try it, like, we normally get something cool. So I think that's kind of, you know, the way to go, is I'd rather record and, you know, just see what happens.
Yeah, I appreciate that in y'all's videos too. And on the live stream, I really enjoy, you know, just putting yourself out there like that. You know what I mean? Because especially in birding, I mean, but you guys know what you're doing, but knowing, you know, or I forget what bird it was that you said. And Ryan said, is that how you say it? And then I was like, oh, like what? Because I butcher every name. I mean, not just people, for sure birds, like they're a hot mess.
Well, I think part of it is that we, you know, really didn't start birding until we were kind of, you know, older. And so like, we're still learning a lot. Like we don't claim to know everything by far. And, you know, we would never like criticize anyone for not knowing something because like there's so much to learn and it can be overwhelming. And I think some people get overwhelmed by birders who are really intense or even mm-hmm. photographers that are really, you know, particular about stuff and it can be kind of a turnoff. And so I think, you know, having friends and other birders and just people that are, you know, are just really care about the birds and are willing to like help people and teach people stuff without any kind of like, oh, I can't believe you didn't know such and such about whatever. It's like, nobody's going to know everything, you know, there's just
true too much. That.
And there's always, that's what's cool about birds is there's so many and there's always something new to learn. You can always learn something from anybody you bird with or talk to.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And especially the new birders, I have found, well, even with the people, it's their first time out, getting to see it like through those eyes again, or see something like you said, like with the behavior, this or that, maybe you overlooked or, oh, it's something, you know what I mean? I enjoy that a lot. Josh up in Ohio, he started a group, Lorraine, birding, whatever. And they would do bird walks on Saturday and then Maggie Mondays and stuff. But I loved it. I loved going, you know, even though it was places I can go to myself, it was so much better to have the other people there and new people I found.
Yeah. And there's also something really amazing of like helping someone get their lifer bird or showing them something. I remember there's this boardwalk called the Joyce Wildlife Management Area, I think. And it's a boardwalk in Louisiana. That's really cool. It goes through like the Cypress Swamp. It's a very like Louisiana vibe, like what you would expect you say you're in Louisiana. And there's a lady there who was looking for her lifer, Northern Perula. And so like you could hear him calling, but I don't think she really was able to pick up the call yet. And so like we ended up helping, you know, helping her locate one, and she got pictures and posted on Facebook later. It was like, oh, thanks like for helping me like find the bird or whatever. And that's a really awesome thing to help show somebody something for the first time and have them experience it. Like you said, you just like see them light up about it and you kind of experience it again through them. And you're like, yeah, you know, Northern Perulas are really awesome.
Yeah, they are. They're beautiful.
It's like you kind of get reminded of that stuff all over again.
I appreciate that for sure. I love the Perulas. What's your favorite warbler?
I really like the Canada warbler. They're a little bit more rare up in Wisconsin, and they just have that like beautiful defined necklace. I just find it like breathtaking. Yeah, and that's awesome too, to just look through the guides and be like, oh, it'd be so cool to see a such and such, and then you finally see it, and it's just full circle. Because when I was young, we had the little, there's like a blue like Stan Tequila Birds of Wisconsin book, and there was the American coot in it, and I was like, oh, it'd be so cool to see an American coot. Now they're everywhere. Every year Ryan and I see so many coots
with their crazy feet.
Yeah, with their crazy feet. And
yeah, I love their feet.
Yeah, they're just goofy. They're not what I thought they would be, you know. They're more, they almost behave more chicken like than
That's funny. But
just that juxtaposition of when you see it in the guide versus when you see it in real life is funny.
For sure. I didn't realize how tiny Elise Bittern was.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, until I saw it in real life, and I'm like, man, in the book. You know, I know it said the inches and everything, but I'm not trying to, you know, do math. So I'm just like, it looked a lot bigger.
It depends if they have their neck extended or not.
Oh yeah, that too. It's tiny though.
I feel like once you see a bird for the first time, you kind of know how it behaves. It's so much easier to find it again. There's just something about watching it as it moves and knowing the real size of it. It just seems like that makes things a lot easier.
Definitely. Wanted to go down and do the ivory bill search. Have you been on that with Matt Horton?
No, not yet.
No,
that's definitely something I want to, you know, be part of at some point though.
Yeah, this sounds so exciting. So I would like to go and search, but again, then you're in the snakes and the gators.
Yeah, well, that's part of the
thing. That's not down the park, you know, on the nice path. That's down in the bayou. So I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, well, I feel like a lot of the times people underestimate just how much land is unexplored down here. Because sometimes it's even hard to find access just to places to go birding, let alone, you know, access to a area of forest like that. Right. So there's a lot of areas that, you know, people aren't really around to check or know what's out there. And Louisiana is a pretty big state, and you get a kind of a wide array of habitats depending on where you're at. So it's interesting.
So do you like the heat down there, the humidity? Are you used to it? How long have you been down there for school?
I moved down last August, I think. So it's gonna be close to, yeah, it was really hot. So it was a whole experience coming down and dealing with the humidity. I like the winter temperatures though, because it's cooler and there's really not that many bugs around. So
on your podcast, or not your podcast, on your YouTube, you're gonna do bird walks with some fans, or try to get something scheduled at some point? I know with y'all being in different states, it's hard.
I mean, I think that'd be a cool idea at some point. Ryan, actually, we are partners with the Conservancy for Healing and Heritage in Franklin. They built this healing chapel across from a hospital. And so it's kind of this area where people can come and you know, rest and relax and take in nature and kind of enjoy everything. So Ryan led a couple of bird walks there pretty recently and had a pretty good turnout of people coming to check out the birds there. I know they had a pair of Cooper's hawks hanging out there, so that was a pretty cool experience. And then I've led some bird walks in like the Muguanago area and stuff, but you know, we're always looking for more opportunities to do stuff like that. And we just kind of started doing more live video stuff. And that's been a really cool experience too, because you kind of get to hear people's reactions in real time, where when you post a video, you kind of, you know, you hear about it like afterwards, but it's a different experience to kind of get that instant feedback from people about stuff.
Yeah, going live. And that's got to be nerve-wracking too, though.
It is when the equipment isn't really working, because us not having really model lives. But, you know, it's kind of like you test it all out and you're like, oh, well, it worked when I tested it, but is it actually going to work while we do it? So for the one live, we had to like, you know, exit out and then open a new one. And so I'm sure we'll get better at it as we go, but it can be a little nerve wracking.
Yeah, but it still seemed like it went smooth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was really fun. Like Ryan and I had a great time doing them, and we're hoping to do more of that stuff in the future. And we like to bring in, you know, other people on too to talk about their experiences and everything like that.
What I know you mentioned some other new things in the future that y'all are going to be doing.
Yeah, well, I got a ton of episodes to do from Louisiana. It's kind of been like in the spring, I've been trying to get out and record as much stuff as possible. A lot of like bird science, bird research, cool projects that I've got to be involved with. So I'll be working on those videos, but we're also hopefully going to start to be doing a couple more collaborations with some people that we're really excited about. And then we're also going to try to do some videos on like particular species of birds, because right now we kind of focus on like the adventure and we'll talk about what we see on the way, but we'd also like to hone in on, you know, one specific species and getting a lot of information about that one. So if people want to, you know, specifically search for that one, there's a lot of stuff there for them to take in.
Yeah, that'll be really good. I forget what I saw. What would you like to see different in birding?
I think I'd like to see more young people involved for sure. Because I think in general, just with all the technology around, it's so easy to just be on your phone and experience things. And someone I really admire his opinion is Matt Miller. He's head of science communications for the Nature Conservancy. and he had an article saying why staying on trail is like bad for nature. So basically the idea of like, you know, we should not ever go off trail. We should just like let nature be, and interacting with it is bad, and we're doing more harm than anything. And he was saying that that's like the totally wrong point of view, that if people don't experience nature firsthand and be out in it, then they're not gonna appreciate it and want to save it. Right. And so I think getting more people out at a younger age to appreciate the wildlife, specifically, you know, for, well, I guess all animals, but you know, we're talking about birds, so getting kids out to appreciate birds, I think would be great. I also think kind of getting rid of the idea that you have to like have a certain amount of technology to bird, because some people are, they'll say like, oh, I'm new, what kind of like camera do I need to do this? Like, well, you don't really need anything. You can do it from your window, or you can just walk outside and look with your eyes. You don't necessarily need binoculars or a camera or anything. You can just go out and enjoy it. So I think kind of it, getting more kids involved, and then kind of breaking that idea that you need any sort of thing to be able to do it. It's kind of like Ratatouille, where they say everyone can cook. It's like everyone can bird. It's not restricted to anybody.
It's true. How old were you when your grandfather was helping you learn about birds?
Pretty young. He would always have his bird feeders out, so he would keep like a yard list, and he had some bird books we would always look through and, you know, try to figure out what was out there. And the big ones were always like the nuthatches. We always like to see those come in. And I know Ryan always got excited when we saw the red-breasted nuthatch, because it wasn't always there. So when it did show up, it was really special.
Yeah.
We had a couple red-breasted nuthatches down in Louisiana this past winter, because it was such a good eruptive year for them. And that was an interesting sight, because I wasn't expecting to really see those this far south.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's another thing, going to other states, like seeing what birds are unusual for that area, if they're birds you're used to seeing. I know that's always like, I forget which one it was, but you know, going along and like, oh, who cares, it's whatever, like a robin or something, like I don't need a picture of it. And then later, like, oh, that was like a rarity, or not rarity, an unusual thing, why didn't I get a picture of that?
Yeah, and also just seeing things in different habitats, because back up north, we get bobolinks that'll nest in the fields and stuff, but here they were migrating through when I saw them, and so it's like a flock of 200 bobolinks. I'm not used to seeing 200 bobolinks constantly.
Oh my God. So you'll now see, you say bobolinks, because that's the proper way, but I would say bobolink. Because it's B-O-B-O.
That's how I've always said it, so
that's the proper way. No, you say it the right way, I say it the wrong
way. Always the plover plubber debate too, and I've always said plover, but I feel like more scientists say plover. My friend Katie Barnes says she says plover because it rhymes with lover.
See, I say plover. I
like plover. Like when I say piping plover, I feel like that's correct, but
yeah, Ohio's got it going on with those right now.
I love those guys.
In history, so first time in 83 or 86, maybe it's in between those two numbers, years that they had a nesting pair. So Nellie and Nish have four babies. Right now, the volunteers are all keeping safe while they're there trying. So it's super exciting. I know, I think the governor was there few days ago or something, showed up with his grandkids to show them.
That's awesome that it's getting so much attention to, you know, having kind of, sounds like the whole state on board and everyone in agreement that it's a really cool thing that they have going on.
I think that's mainly because of the Kaufmans too. Mm-hmm. Or as I would say, the Kaufmanns. That's what Kennan. But they did the Black Swamp Bird Observatory there. You know, I think that's who's in charge of organizing all the volunteers and everything up there right now for it and getting all the coverage for them. So yeah, it's super exciting for them.
Yeah, we've had Katie Barnes, who I mentioned from Audubon, Louisiana, and volunteers and people have been doing a lot of work with the beach nesting birds down here, because people love to go party on the beach and like drive the trucks through and stuff, and they don't really know that it's important beach nesting bird habitats. They have areas of the beach roped off, and they have signs that like the school children made, like telling people with their, you know, drawings not to bother the birds and everything. So they've been doing a lot of stewardship work over there, and all that stuff. Really,
yeah, that's good. And people don't know, you know what I mean? We always talk about it when we were on the beaches, even up in Cleveland at Lake Erie, where the kids running through the gulls or, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was actually trying to scan through a flock of gulls and terns, and there was a little girl who kept running and scaring them. And her mom, even when she saw that, you know, we were looking at them, she just, you know, let her kid keep doing it. But, like, I feel like, you know, that's just something that's kind of fun to, it's hard to fault like the kid for it, but you know, I at least think a parent, if you see somebody looking at the birds, then maybe you should not let your kid do it.
Absolutely. Right.
Out of a respect.
Have a little couth, right? That's what you would think. I mean, I know we were looking at terns and a family came up on bikes and we were in South Carolina. And the family came up on bikes and the dad and mom were like, shh, because, you know, they saw us with the bins and cameras, you know, and they like got real quiet, stopped, went way around, you know what I mean? And then I was like, thank you so much. Like, it's fine. You can come through or just, you know, taking pics. But it was so nice to actually see someone being courteous, you know, with kids.
Yeah, like I really appreciate it when people do that.
Yeah, me too. And they don't know a lot of times, like you said. I know Josh had mentioned it too, like, oh, we all ran through the gulls when we were kids, you know. Sometimes it's just that, hey, do you know,
we all run through a flock of gulls at some point in our lives.
Right, exactly. It's like, man, that bird's like really trying to rest right now or what, you know what I mean? But you know, they're just doing it. They don't know better, but hopefully they'll learn and do better. I love your channel and the fact that you have merchandise now too.
Oh yeah, we just started that. I actually ordered a couple t-shirts for myself because Ryan always wears them and I'm just wearing like a regular shirt. So I'll soon have the merch to actually wear it. And we got some mugs too, so.
The chat.
Yeah, it was cool stuff because we've been doing this thing called Let's Chat where like Ryan and I, it's basically morphed into the live stream at this point, but we just talk about like different things in the birding community or kind of whatever we want to discuss that day.
That's how we do it. That's how you got to do it when you're doing birding. Because I mean, I know I'm ADD anyway, but I mean, it's like so many cool things or things that pop up. Or, oh, did you hear about the, you know, this bird popping up over here? Let's go chase this. Now, do you chase them? Not, you know, literally, but like we go chase birds where they all put on rarities that come through the state and then people will go chase, you know, go to find the bird.
Yeah, we definitely like target specific things that we want to see. Especially if it's like a bird we've never seen before, we'll definitely make a specific trip to go out and find something. And that's like where a lot of the episodes come from. It'll be like, you know, rare bird, this or this or this or whatever. And that's normally how we, you know, go to some of the cool places that we end up really, really liking and go back to a lot. Like, I think we were looking for a blue grosbeak at Spring Green Preserve in Wisconsin. And it's actually like a desert. There's cacti there, prickly pear cacti, and there's like a bluff. Yeah, and I was like, I had no idea Wisconsin had a little desert habitat, and there's totally different animals that live there. There's, you know, a couple different snake species that you are hard to find elsewhere in the state. There's like a couple of lizards that you can find there. It's a totally different place. You feel even transported out west. And we found that just because we wanted to go look for a bird one day.
That's awesome. Now, are your park systems up there? Do you have like big parks? I don't know, like in Ohio, it's the only thing I know of is like the metro parks, but it's the whole state, like different parks and areas and, you know.
Yeah, there's a ton of great places out there. So like there's a bunch of nature trails, just like, you know, bike trails that you can ride on. There's, you know, individual nature centers that are properties you can go on. And then there's the state parks and the county parks, and there's always new places to explore. So I feel really grateful up there to have so much of that nearby. Here in Louisiana, just it feels so much harder to find that. Like I have to drive 30, 45 minutes just to go to a trail I can walk on that's super short.
Right.
And that's what makes it tough is when I'm birding out here, I normally have to make it a whole day thing. So I'm driving, you know, an hour, hour and a half, 3 hours just to get to my destination before I can even get out and start birding. So it's definitely different, and you definitely have to more plan like a whole day thing out here. We're up north. I can just like, oh, I want to go to this place and be there. And
Yeah, that's what I found too in Louisiana, especially. Well, St. Francis, though, when I would visit there, they had like Cat Island nearby and stuff, but you know what I mean? I don't want to go to that park like by myself, or you're back in the boonies by, you know what I mean? Stuff. If it's like a park with trails and stuff, but like some of them are so remote and like you have to drive forever to get to somewhere. They don't have like a park system like I'm used to up north. So I don't know if it's just the north has better ones or, you know what I mean? Because even in Florida, I have not found parks like that as you know, I went to a few wetland preserves and stuff like that, but I mean, we call them metro parks up there, but they just don't have like that whole system.
Yeah, I was talking about this with somebody else. I don't remember exactly what we were talking about, but we were saying how what you grew up with, you just assume everybody has the same thing. Like I just kind of assumed every state had park systems like we did. And so when I go out, I, you know, appreciate those a lot more when I'm back.
Yeah, I guess that is true. Because that's what we grew up with. So yeah, I thought everyone did. And then when I go to a state, I'm like, where's y'all's parks at? And even like guides, like bird guides and stuff, Ohio. I don't know why I'm woohoo in Ohio today, but whatever, man, they have like great books and they're all free and CDs of all the bird songs and like stream fish and every amphibian, you know, like all these free guidebooks at all the parks for, you know, whoever. And I'm like, that helps so much. And then, you know, I come to other states and I'm like, y'all have a bird list or anything like for your state or like a pamphlet? Can I get something?
Yeah, and if you go out west to so like Cameron Parish area in Louisiana, it's pretty remote out there. Like there's areas that don't have cell phone reception. And that's they got pretty hammered by the hurricanes out there, so they're still recovering. And so when I drive out there for like a trip, I need to make sure I get gas before I hit a certain point, because once you reach a certain area, it's really hard to find gas stations. So it's totally different planning. It's kind of like camping almost to some degree, where you kind of plan having food and getting gas at certain points, and it makes it a lot more intense with your trip planning versus, you know, when I'm up north and I can get gas wherever I want and not really have to worry about losing cell phone reception or
right
car issue out there in the middle of nowhere and being stranded and all that.
Yeah, not fun, not down there. I mean, it's hard for anybody, but especially
something I have felt down here is all of the birders that I met have been really generous. Like people are really open to like having people come visit and like, you know, and one of my videos I mentioned the homeowners like made me some gumbo and invited me in and all that. And I feel like birders in general are, you know, really nice people and they want to help others and all that. And then there's this one place, I'm not going to mention it by name, but it's like a person's property where they allow people to come bird, and it's a nice migratory hotspot. So there's a lot of great stuff in the birding community of people just being really generous and helpful and, you know, letting people come on their property and all that. So it's a lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah, that's awesome. I forget whose house. Oh, it was the Amish. They're really good birders too. Do you have Amish in Wisconsin?
I think we do. I'm not super familiar with their locations or anything like that.
Yeah.
I feel like I normally see them at the zoo though.
We had a lot, especially where we lived in south of our house, but fantastic birders. Fantastic. And whenever they find something, everyone's welcome. You know, they're so accommodating and so nice. It's like, you know.
That's the best when somebody has a rare bird and they let everyone come see. Like we had the Wisconsin's first state record Allen's hummingbird. Pam, the homeowner, was like, at first she was trying to schedule when people could come see it. And then she was just like, anyone can come and look at it. And so she had everyone sign a guest book and she had a great time hosting everyone and everything too.
That's awesome.
We had a video about that too. But I think the worst thing is when somebody posts they have a really rare bird at their house. And then like, oh, but we don't want anyone to come see it.
It's right. Like, I was like, why'd you post it?
Don't even tell me. I don't even want to know. I think the worst thing was there was one bird where it was like somebody had it at their house. And they only invited select people to come see it. And the criteria was based on like it seemingly kind of a random like subjective thing about, I don't think it was necessarily who like the best burgers in the state were. It was some weird thing where they had some protocol or some way of picking people to go see it. And it was just kind of like,
yeah, weird. Cool.
Just kind of like doesn't sit really well with you.
Right. What, like, speaking of stuff like that, like in birding, as far as like changes that you want to see, but have you seen, now that we're, it's just spoke of that, like the unethical behavior from birders, like have you been
on
that, or how do you handle that? Because I've been around it a few times,
I don't, personally, I don't think I've been around very much of that. But I mean, I think educating people as much as you can in a respectful way, because as far as unethical behavior goes, first of all, there's some people that just don't know like what the proper behavior is. And they're very open if you say like, hey, it's not really cool to get that close to owls because they can spook really easily. They're like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so sorry. I had no idea.
Right. Whatever.
And then there's the people that just don't care. Like they know, they just want to get like a really good photograph. And so it's,
and don't, I think they, it's have the biggest lenses, Darren? Don't they have like this ginormous lens? And it's like,
where you get a picture of the lens, this big, and I'm getting a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It always is like,
So I think educating as much as you can, but at like the end of the day, it's kind of hard to try to police that stuff, because unless there's some kind of like federal regulation, people can kind of do what they want. And people also have kind of the assumption like, oh, if the bird, you know, doesn't want to be around, it can just leave. And that's true to some degree. But like, if it's nesting in an area, it really doesn't have a lot of choice. So it's definitely like a fine line there. And kind of, you know, it kind of brings up the question of like, sometimes is all that publicity good for certain species? Like with the piping plovers, it seems like it's definitely a good thing that the city has going on there. But if there were people there every day photographing them and kind of freaking them out, then it can easily turn into something negative. So it's definitely a fine line to walk on there.
I mean, yeah, and that's like very controlled too, you know what I mean? They put like a huge cage over where they nested, they roped it off, they put sign, you know what I mean? Like it's such a huge thing. But I know if they didn't have all that there, you know what I mean? That would be
Yeah, it'd be tough, sure. But I think like just kind of, you know, if you see something, trying to educate people, and if they're, you know, willing to understand it. If they continuously are doing things negative, then I think, you know, you have the ability to call on some higher powers to maybe help control some of that stuff. But it's fine. That's what's tough about definitely like herps, you know, like reptiles and turtles and stuff like that, because Ryan and I have pondered the idea of, you know, going to look for that kind of stuff and doing videos about that. But that's really touchy with location, because if people know where something is, people can go and collect, and that stuff is going to normally stay in relatively the same area. So you kind of have to worry about people going and harassing that stuff. Where with birds, at least, a lot of the birds that we look for, they're, you know, rare, then they're not going to be in the area super long, or you know, they do have the ability to fly, so it's a little less of a concern for them. But other things you got to be a little more careful about.
Yeah, that's true. Would you ever have a like a parakeet or anything, like a caged bird?
I had parakeets when I was younger. Probably the nicest one, I had one that was named Keet, and he would always sit on my shoulder and hang out. You could pet his belly and get him to step thing.
What color was he?
He was like a tealish color with some yellow.
And kind of on his head.
Not like a greenish either, like a bluish teal. And he was probably my nicest one. But I think I'm actually like technically allergic to birds. It's not great for me to have one in my room. But it was
not really.
it was fun having a parakeet, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I did too. I had one when I was little.
He would swim. He'd take baths in his little like water container sometimes, and it was like a square container, so he wouldn't really fit in it, and you would see his feet paddling because it was clear. it was fun.
Yeah, I had a little like purple one, purple colors in it when I was little. That was the only bird what we ever had. It was just that one. But I always wonder, because some birders, I don't know if they would want a bird, you know what I mean? even though it's like a parakeet or something, if they would want one, or some of them are against it or not.
Yeah, hard to say.
Mm-hmm. I like them. I mean, I don't want one now. I don't want anything now. I'm done. Not that I'm finished with all of it. So what else is going on for Badgerland Birding? Now, that channel's been out for like 4 years.
I think
2016 or something.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we're working on the collaboration stuff. We have a lot of episodes that I'm going to be doing here about a lot of the research. I can probably talk a little bit about some of the research stuff that we've been doing. One of the things that I mentioned with the beach banding, or with the chicks on the beach, is Katie's team from Audubon, Louisiana, goes out and bands Wilson's plover chicks, common nighthawk chicks, and least tern chicks. And they're some of the cutest little birds I've ever seen. And they're just adorable. The common nighthawks are so fluffy and they look so angry. It's a hilarious combination.
What was the name? Poof or Ploof something? What was
Ploof Goblin is what one of the field techs called them that. So it fits really well. So we'll be, you know, doing some more stuff about the chick banning. And I had to go out and with them and look for some of those. And it's kind of like a scavenger hunt while you're out there. So it was a cool experience and, you know, really important work they're doing with protecting those beaches. So, and I think Ryan and I are trying to possibly get like a live stream schedule. Like maybe we'll do it like once a week or once a month or something.
Nice.
So we could get like a, you know, regular time together to do that. Cause it's also nice. Cause when I'm down here in Louisiana, like, you know, we get to video chat more and talk to other people too. So it's nice to catch up that way as well.
Yeah, that would be really nice. So there's always the thing I ask is the flipping the bird.
Mm-hmm.
It's a misconception or something that you thought about a bird. And then once you came educated on it, you're like, oh, I didn't know that. Like, oh, birds don't live in nests, you know, like they're homeless or whatever. So do you have a flipping the bird?
Yeah, I think I have so kind of a misconception and then just kind of like a cool fact added onto it. But I think the biggest misconception for us when we started was if a bird's range is in a certain area, that it's going to be in that area. But like we just thought it was, oh, the book says it's here, it's going to be here.
Right.
But like birds are super dependent on specific habitats and some are eruptive species. And so just because your field guide says a bird should be in an area, shouldn't be in an area, doesn't mean that it necessarily will or won't be there. And also that stuff is constantly changing. Like I mentioned with the limpkin now expanding their range and everything. So just because it says it in your field guide doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. So I think that's, you know, a big misconception. And also I was out on one of the islands here doing some research with a grad student on the royal terns. And so we saw them nesting in some kind of like matted down vegetation. And when I was looking online as to like where they normally nest, it was like, oh, they'll nest in, you know, sand or gravel. And I was like, and matted down vegetation because I've seen it. And so a lot of the times you just assume stuff, you read like, that's it. They don't do anything else. But you know, when you're out in the field, you'll see behaviors that might not, you know, necessarily be documented as occurring all the time. So
right. That's good to know.
Yeah, for sure. And then just kind of a cool fact I wanted to throw in there was we normally try to learn some interesting facts about all the birds we see. And we've been getting a lot of wood storks in Louisiana now that they're coming in at this summer.
Love there's them.
That parents will actually regurgitate water onto their children to keep them cool. So kind of a weird, cool fact.
I love their face. Oh, there's two here. And every time I see them, I'm like, oh, the wood storks are out there. And of course, I was in the house and my husband came running and he's like, the wood stork just took a big fish from the cormorant. I'm like, what? He's like, he got it. So I run out there and here he's eating this catfish. Big. I mean, it was like, and like, there's no way he's going to eat that. He did.
Went wow.
I can't remember which other bird came over because he was messing with it for a while. I probably took like 500 pictures and I'm like, I know if I don't keep clicking, it'll be the one time he throws it up and actually, but you know, but he was kind of not stabbing at it, but kind of messing around and it would pick it up and try it different ways. And then think it was a Snowy or something walked over. And man, he just pooped and that thing went in like, and I'm like, I can't believe he ate it. And so I thought he would really be full. No. He walked right back to the water and started hunting again. I'm like, I cannot believe this bird is hungry.
I was amazed at the size of prey birds try to eat.
I don't understand how they can breathe when, especially like a great blue, or I've seen them swallow some crazy stuff. I'm like, how doesn't it cut up their throat?
And we were sampling at one of our field sites today for gar, and we came across a big like flock of pelicans. And so we were driving through that to get somewhere else. So the pelicans flew off and there was a gar just sitting there. And we were like, oh, how did this get here? And Scott, one of our, connections for the site, he was like, oh, the pelican was probably trying to eat it or threw it up because they realized it had to fly and it had to reduce some weight. So it was just this short-nosed gar sitting there. And it was like an adult. And so I ended up just putting it over to the other side and letting it go, and it was fine. But, presumably one of the pelicans was trying to eat it. And I know that they do eat gar and stuff like that from time to time. So
yeah, they'll eat some crazy stuff. I've seen some YouTube videos of some crazy stuff they've eaten. I'm like, oh, man, I don't know if pelicans eat that. But yeah, I guess they will eat anything.
Yeah, they need their own reality show where they try to get them to eat food and see if they'll do it or not.
That was the great blue swallowing all the gophers.
Oh yeah, that's weird to watch.
And I'm like, how is he breathing? I mean, it doesn't seem like everything's always said when they swallow it.
No, I think it rattles around for a bit sometimes.
Yeah,
it's kind of even more unnerving. Like if you can just think about having like a pterodactyl sized bird terrorizing you, like I wouldn't appreciate it. It'd be I don't think I would birdwatch. I'd birdwatch for safety. I'd be like, we need to make sure things aren't around so we can survive.
Right? I know, it's so crazy how they do that. Well, I feel bad. How long have we been talking? An hour and a half. Jesus.
It's easy to talk birds, sorry.
Right? I'm like, oh my God, I feel so bad. I have been here forever and I'm going all over the place. Because once you start talking birds, my brain just starts going everywhere because I'm like, oh,
what about there's just so much to talk about.
I know, that's so true. Well, we have your merchandise. We have the YouTube channel. We have a website also for Badgerland Birding.
Yeah.
Or .wordpress. And any other things that you want to put out there?
Yep. We got the channel Badgerland Birding on YouTube, and then the merch, and then the blog, and then I think pretty soon we're going to be starting an email list. So because YouTube's kind of funky about when it tells people we're releasing new videos. So we'd like to send an email where we can just tell people we really released a new video, and then also some background information. So I think we'll be launching that pretty soon. So be on the lookout for that. And just wanted to say, we appreciate all the work you're doing, April, too, helping get the word out there about birds and birding and all that fun stuff. So, and really appreciate you having me on to talk as well.
I'm so excited you were here. And Ryan will have to get his butt over here, too.
You'll have to come back on some other time, and you can tell you stories about me when I was young.
Or you both can come back.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
We can talk again. I love that you made the time. I know you're super busy with school and birding. And I mean, that takes up all my time. I know. I don't know how you do school or anything else. I don't know how you do it. And then if y'all are ever up in South Carolina, we'll go birding together.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I would love to. Or maybe I'll have to come down there too. Who knows?
Come down and do something with Matt. That'd be fun.
I know, I want to really bad, but well, right now it's hurricane season, so I'm ready up to wait. <Yeah. laughs> But I do appreciate you so much, and we'll see you.
Sounds good. Thanks, April.
Hey, thanks. I didn't realize the time went that fast either.
Oh, no, I love talking birds.
All right, well, I'm happy then. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. All right, well, thanks so much, April. Great talking to you.
All right, you too, honey. Bye.
All right, bye.
Well, that wraps up up another episode of My Favorite Birder. Please hit subscribe and follow us on Facebook. And I'll see you out birding.